Welcome to the Macro Millionaire Podcast with Jesse and Erica Dale, where we explore how to get the most out of life, focusing on purpose, passion, and prosperity.
Guys, welcome. Macro Millionaire discussion today. We have longtime coach Thomas Hilton with us today, and we're going to be hopefully duking it out. We don't want to just sit here and validate each other on this topic, but I'm sure we'll agree on some things as well, because they're both science-backed individuals. If you don't know who Thomas is, he has been a Macro Millionaire certified coach for quite some time. He's been a very accomplished bodybuilder in the NPC. He's done some other organizations as well. We won't talk about them, but he's been an accomplished bodybuilder in the National Physique Committee, which is the biggest amateur bodybuilding federation in the world. He is also an NPC official. So if you're a resident here in Indiana, or if you do any Indiana shows, you've probably seen Thomas at definitely my shows on the judges table, helping to officiate shows. He's also, like I mentioned, been a certified coach for quite some time and has led many, many athletes to victory, both on stage and off stage. He doesn't just help with people go and prep for shows. He also helps with general populations, older populations, and so forth. So as far as bringing an expert in to discuss and maybe duke it out with me on the topic of high fat, low fat, high carb, low carb, what is optimal? And we're going to kind of keep today's discussion as far as what is optimal for fat loss, performance, okay, so exercise and performance, recovery, and muscle building. I mean, I think those are the big three. I can't think of another thing that really would be crazy relevant for today's discussion. So I'm going to first start with my views and then kind of pepper Thomas with maybe some questions, or Thomas, if I say something a little audacious, you can just interject right in. But my views are, and I'll show you, I published an article for Fitness and Physique. It's up here somewhere. Okay. This was back in, I think, 2007. It was called Using Carbohydrates Optimally. And as a competitor, as a coach way back in the day, I was a very high carb person. Matter of fact, I just told an athlete who's prepping, hey, you want to diet on as many carbohydrates as you can. And I'm starting to second guess that, and I'm starting to wonder, really, is the carbs really all, you know, the cat's pajamas when it comes to performance, when it comes to recovery? I mean, you could read glycogen replenishment studies, marathon runners, they'll take dextrose packets when they're running. So it's kind of just widely accepted. Yeah, dude, carbs are your body's main source of energy. Okay, that I would agree that that's true, but is that optimal? So my views, especially as diving into the research, have really changed as far as I don't really think it matters. And it's, here's the thing, follow science, don't follow people. What Jesse Dale has to say really isn't relevant. So I'm going to kind of have Thomas bring his view in on this, and then I'm going to pull up a few studies and we can kind of discuss further. But as far as how I sit right now, if your fats are at 20% or more, which is what the data suggests for healthy testosterone levels, particularly if you're in a calorically deprived state. Matter of fact, got Lane Norton's certification manual here right in front of me, and he cites several studies. Hey, keep your fats 20% of total daily energy intake, total calorie intake, and really the rest, you know, you can kind of sort out. I think he tends to favor a little bit higher carbohydrate if possible. My viewpoint, and I'll cite some studies, is I don't really think it matters if calories are equated. I'll talk about some psychological factors, but Thomas, when you're dealing with clients, kind of what's your go-to? You a high carb guy, low carb guy?
I would say I lean a little more towards higher carbs, especially for the younger athletes. And then as you get into older athletes, I still push more carbs, but they tend to need a little more protein due to the aging process and sarcopenia and stuff. So I tend to shift a few more of those calories over. Now, when it comes to fat, for men, I tend to keep it at like minimum at least 20%. But then for women, because of the extra hormone regulation and processing they've got dealing with that, I tend to push them to minimum 30% with their diets, which does tend to take away some from the carbs. But ultimately, when they're looking at when I'm looking at their balance for the day, if I tell them like marry the carbs and fats, so you can have higher carbs one day, go a little less on your fats to accommodate it or balance it out. So, or vice versa, right? If your fats are higher, then just accommodate by carbs. But I will say, when it comes to getting ready for shows, carbs are seem to be the biggest tool for manipulating or moving the water through the body. And so when we're trying to get somebody peaked for the stage, I find that to be pretty important. And ironically, it's also usually the biggest bank of the calories in a person's day. So it also tends to be the one that takes the biggest hit when you're reducing calories through the process. So I guess I'm kind of in the same, a similar boat with, I tend to lean more towards higher carbs. Personally, I found, that I've kind of, as time has went on, like I've shifted a little to a little less carbs. It's really interesting. I don't, it was like unintentional. I used to be a lot higher carbs, but stay a little bit lower on them now than I used to, and it keeps me a little bit leaner in the off season.
Yeah.
I don't know if I just
You
adapted to it or
know,
what.
that is super industry. I'm going to throw some studies up here on the screen in a second, but that is super interesting what you just said is I'm finding that for those that don't know my story, in 2016 I was diagnosed with super low T. They wanted to put me on injections and stuff when I basically told them no, because I didn't have any symptoms. I was ripped. I was benching a Buick. Then in 2017, it was even lower. And I started to have, I only had actually one symptom, but that symptom was enough. I was like, dude, I can't have this. Put me on the HRT. And ever since then, it took a while to get those hormones balanced. Ever since then, it just seems that my body responds better to fat. And you mentioned, in the older populations, it seems like our bodies are responding better to fat. And I'm curious or wondering if that has to do with because our hormones as we get older tend to get a little bit more out of balance. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with water retention, or I guess, what do you think the mechanism is? Because you mentioned, hey, I'm kind of gravitating to higher fat as I age. I know I've gravitated to lower carbs as I aged as well.
I'm not really sure what it is either. I'm wondering if maybe it's the efficiency of the body to convert. We tend to get a little more insulin resistant as we age, right? And so I wonder if some of it's that. And so our body is just tolerating it less, and fat tends to be where you tend to shift it to. Plus, if you're trying, like, fats are really helpful or useful in hormone regulation in the body. So when you tend to push your fats a little higher, maybe it's helping facilitate the fewer hormones that we tend to have passing around as we're getting older. It's helping facilitate or grease the wheel per se, or grease the axle to get them moving easier, so they're more utilized. So I'm wondering if maybe that's playing into it more so than, fat itself is not really helping me to build muscle or to necessarily maintain the muscle. It's more of a, what I call a mover and a shaker when it comes to the transporting nutrients.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. And I will say that as we age, our joint pain tends to go up, oxidative stress, inflammation, things of that nature. And I know that the fats higher in omega-3s tend to help us manage that. Now, I think a lot of micronutrient dense carbohydrates can do that too, but let's face it, we've probably adulterated carbohydrates the most in the American diet, with just all the stuff that we, I'm not saying that carbs are bad, but it means we just adulterated that quite a bit with high fructose corn syrup. And again, I'm not saying necessarily that's anything wrong with that substrate, but there's just the quantity in our carbs. It's very tough to get a non-fruit or vegetable or a non-growing carbohydrate without it having a whole bunch of something in it. If you're just getting like bread or whatnot. I'm gonna pull up a study here. And this was incredibly validating, kind of and a little surprising, but it's a study, National Library of Medicine, that said the effect of high fat versus high carbo diet on body composition. And what I like this is in strength trained people. So if you look at studies done on non-strength trained people, they may have other health markers in their life because they're not working out. They might be high, like cigarette smokers. They might be high, alcohol consumers. But strength trained athletes tend to not have these other mitigating circumstances surrounding them. So I think it's more like pure data. And this study concluded that the low fat, high carb group, the body fat was reduced by 1.5%, but it goes on to say, nevertheless, it was worth emphasizing that despite significant changes in the groups, these changes were not statistically significant between the groups. So in other words, diets with different carbohydrate and fat intake and the energy value covering the energy needs of men in training strength sports have similar impact on changes in body composition. Now, I really would like to know, and we're going to explore another study where they equated calories. I don't know if this study, I'd have to dive a little bit deeper in, because whenever you read a study that says, oh, hey, high carbs are better or low carbs are better, you want to make sure that they're equating calories and they're specifically equating protein and fiber. I don't know if this study did that, but basically this study in a nutshell says high carb, low carb, they both saw very similar results, really not statistically different results. And this was done on men 19 to 35.
What I think would be interesting to know about this particular study was, obviously the body composition didn't change, but what was the water composition and body? How much water was retained? Because obviously with glycogen stores being higher or holding on to more carbs, you tend to hold more water. That in terms of bodybuilding is honestly just, it's kind of important to know and how to figure out how to manipulate that. And then also, I truly believe that over the long run, over several weeks, right, several months, that as long as you're trending downward, right, in terms of the body fat, it's not going to matter, right? But in the short term, in like, say, a week or 2 week period, right, if it was just a short term study, that right. Water retention can make a big difference between the way you look, even though on the scale when they go and do the body fat, in the body, whatever they tested them with, to check their body composition. We know they're highly inaccurate anyway, but it can greatly affect those numbers based on how hydrated you are.
Yeah, very, very good point. Actually, before we move on to our next study, I want to kind of dive into what you just mentioned. As far as, we know that our muscles are 80% water. So that's one of the reasons why I used to be, and kind of can argue it both ways, such a high carb advocate. Hey, dude, you want to volumize your muscles. They're 80% water. Low carbs, you're not going to be able to volumize your muscles. Now, I did a prep in 2018, and my hormones were really going bonkers back then. I didn't know it at the time, but my estrogen was way out of whack. But anyway, as a result, I was on a 1,500-calorie diet, man, just crushing it. just walking zombie. And as a result, the carbs were uber low, like sub-100 daily. I was doing two refeeds a week, but on average, my carbs were sub-100. And dude, I had, despite all the other issues, I had a pretty full physique. And what I was doing is, and I don't have any science to pull this, I might be able to dig into it. I just don't have any to present to you today. I posted that last study in the comments here for those that are interested. But what I was doing is very high doses of micronutrient-rich carbs. I mean, like 500 to 600 grams of kale, spinach, broccoli. I mean, probably 800-900 grams when you put all my veggies together. And I was able, and I was also doing very high water, like a gallon and a half plus of water. And I came in pretty darn full and dry for that show. So my question to you, Thomas, just kind of anecdotally, have you found that there are other ways to fill out the body other than carbs? Fill out the muscles.
Good question. You've heard of sodium manipulation. I'm not a big proponent of that, because that's one you're trying to work against the body, and it's faster than we are, smarter.
Right.
You release aldosterone and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I've kind of leaned a lot harder on the plant-based stuff myself, because I find that's really unlocking the energy. And that's usually for me why I always did the high carb in the first place, was more for the energy that you get for the workouts and performance aspect. But when you start leaning it harder and harder into more plant-based veggies, fiber foods, things like that, it tends to stick with you longer and you're unlocking actual energy potential. So as for filling up the muscle, I mean, I've always been a big proponent ever since I started actually getting educated around nutrition, on leaning harder on the veggies and fruits than I had in the past. I guess the one clinging thing I have to carbs is that when you rely on those, or you feed your body's carbs, you're also kind of giving a preservation mode for the protein. Like a lot of people I find when they go really high fats, they go high protein, super low carb, they're now using a lot of, obviously, for makes sense, right? They're using the protein and using the fats for energy. Your body's not as efficient at converting those into energy and glucose for the muscles to function. So when I kind of look at it as a muscle, a protein preserving thing, so I'm using it for actual muscle repair rather than trying to use it to fuel my workouts or my day. Because to me, when I run on just a high, like I used to do a really high protein diet. I mean, there was at one point I was like 300 grams a day,
Woo.
and it was one, my gut didn't like it. So the movements were not great.
Right.
And two, I really just felt lethargic, and I put on a lot of body fat, even though it was technically higher than my carbs. So when I brought it back down to normal, my body was liked it a lot better when I had a little higher carbs. It didn't mess with
Yeah.
it. I know that's maybe a little off track from what you'd asked, but I
No.
guess I don't know. I'm not really in big difference on you know. I've seen people where, like, I've had clients where they went and they had like just a ton of asparagus, like just
Right.
eat crap out of asparagus, and then he's like, "I've had the best pump in the gym I've ever had," and it's like, asparagus should be a diet, and that's it's a natural diuretic, so it should be
Right.
pulling water, not pushing water. But if it's getting your body to function better, right, you're getting better nutrients from it, then I think that opens up that doorway to, if
Yeah.
you're getting your carbs in one way or another, you'll still get that benefit.
I think the mechanism that could be at work is the veggies, maybe they're finding a way to hydrate the muscle. I think you hit the nail on the head with sodium. Personally, I do an exorbitant amount of sodium. Like there's no caps on our seasonings in the Dale house. It's just they're cap free, and I pour it, I don't shake it on. But I do think that the electrolytes, so your sodium potassium ratio can be instrumental in filling out muscles. I think carbohydrates is probably the most reliable and most efficient. But I do think that there are other ways. And I love what you said about carbs. There's just no two ways to refute that. They are absolutely muscle sparing. Glucose, glycogen is going to be muscle sparing. And that would be particularly important for folks who are just on a low calorie diet, period. So I'm going to pull up another study. And what I love about this study, you guys know that I like replicatable science. You could pretty much get one study to say almost whatever you want it to say. There's even a name for that, where there's studies that are kind of outliers and they kind of go against the grain. But if you're looking at reliability, you want studies that are duplicatable, replicatable. Okay. So what does the bulk of the literature said? So this is a systemic review on the effect of carbohydrate intake on strength and resistance training performance. I mean, that's awesome. That's kind of exactly what we're talking about. Again, I'm going to put the link to this study. It's a pretty thorough study, so you guys can pick it apart yourself. But I'm going to go over some of the key points that I took away from it. And what I took away is, again, they really didn't find much of a difference between high carb or low carb. They did find, here, I kind of cut some things here. The lack of isocaloric control. So remember what I said at the beginning, when you're looking at a study, you want to make sure that you're controlling the calories. This study did look at, I believe, 16 different studies that did control calories. So that is something that you want to make sure that you look at. So let's see. Is it possible to determine whether superior performance in some studies can be attributed to carbohydrate intake per se? There may also be a non-metabolic component to the ergogenic effects, that's the performance enhancing effects of a pre-workout meal, regardless of carbohydrate intake. So if you look at the study, they gave some people a placebo that had like 5 calories in it, and they saw just as good performance as a group that had carbohydrates in with the meal. These researchers found that a high carbohydrate breakfast, 1.5 grams per kilogram, improved resistance training performance compared to drinking only water after an overnight fast. However, a flavor and texture matched placebo breakfast with only 29 calories improved performance similarity. So, point that I want to kind of get to here, and I think that clients misunderstand this because they listen to some dude on TikTok or a guy on Instagram with 100,000 followers, and like, oh, I want to look like her. I want to look like him. And they do high carb, low carb. Your belief is going to guide a lot of your look. And then I think this study, this proves it right here, that the people that ate 29 calories prior to their workout believed that they were eating some type of energy substrate, and they weren't. Second part, so that's kind of the placebo effect. In conclusion, carbohydrate intake per se, independent of energy intake, is mechanically and statistically unlikely to acutely affect resistance training performance in a fed state for workouts of up to 10 sets per muscle group. Now, I saw this when we owned our CrossFit gym. We would train a lot of people for shows. They were on low carb just because by nature they were on low calorie, and they would set deadlift PRs, dude, all the way up to leading to the show. One, they believed that they could. Okay. They trusted me and they trusted the science that I was driving from, which at the time was a little bit higher carb. They just were on lower calorie, but they were increasing performance. So it goes on to say there's clear need for more isocaloric research in realistic placebos. However, given the uncertainty in the literature based on Lynch and Krings et al., strength trainees may be advised to consume. Now, this is interesting. May be advised to consume at least 15 grams of carbohydrate along with protein 3 hours pre-workout. That's not a lot of carbs. And this study isn't even saying that they found that to be performance enhancing. They're saying you might want to. Thomas, what are, 'cause that was a lot. I just threw a lot out there. What are some takeaways or response that you have?
So for me, that's speaking a little bit to the like the anabolic window that there's a lot of bro science around and myths that really it's not like I'll see people that are trying to do like a quick carb or something like a high sugar fruit like banana and then a protein shake or something within 30 minutes of going to the gym. The problem is it's just not going to digest and actually produce any results in the gym. And so to me, what it's saying is that you eating something far enough in advance of the gym is going to start the process in the body to start queuing you up, like especially like you said, if you believe in it or that it's going to help you, it's almost like there's a hormonal response, and it could be that rise in cortisol that the anticipation or a fight or flight sort of response where you start to kind of signal to the body to release glucose, and so it'll start to activate and put it in the muscles in preparation for actually going to work and doing work in the gym. Now that has a bit of it. That's a, like a catabolic effect on the muscle, right? Because it could potentially be taken from directly from the muscle, breaking the tissue down to generate the glucose, as it also comes from the liver. Or if you're eating something, in my opinion, it's going to go and look to that first, try to get the glucose pulled from that, versus trying to pull it from the muscle tissue. So to me, it's my more muscle sparing again to have something a fed exercise. Now, ultimately, if you refeed yourself with it's not going to matter, right? Calories are equated. But performance wise in the gym, in my opinion, going fed versus unfed, I always feel better because I'm not like lightheaded and feeling nauseous because I'm just so hungry.
Yeah, I routinely I go unfed.
And I think it's what you get used to, right?
Yes.
I mean, ultimately, the reason people can go through the gym and work out unfed, in my opinion, versus fed, is your stomach digestive process slows down because of the rising cortisol from the, you know, fight or flight symptoms, right? You're now prioritizing, telling the body, I want to have priority energy going to my muscles, my hands, my feet, my extremities. Ignore the digestive process. And that's where the that anabolic window to me is bull crap.
Right.
Because you're not in that press in that moment, you're not, your body's just, it's holding on to it. It's just sitting there. It's not doing much. Like it's slowed down to a crawl. And then when the parasympathetic nervous system kicks back in to kind of calm everything back down a few hours later, now it has time to start digesting and processing because it's relieved the body.
Absolutely. Now I'll also say I am a later eater too. I tend to eat later in the evening. So I think, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why I wake up and I train fairly first thing in the morning. I'm going to bring up, share the screen here. And this is back to that same systemic review. And there is something that kind of caught my mind in reading this too, which I'll point out, but saying acutely higher carbohydrate intake did not improve performance in 13 studies. So acutely, they're saying in the short term, and enhanced performance in 6 studies, primarily in those with fasted control groups and workouts with over 10 sets per muscle group. I think that's key. One study found that a carbohydrate meal improved performance compared to water, but not in comparison to sensory matched placebo breakfast. Okay, so again, back to that placebo effect. There was no evidence of dose response effect. After glycogen depletion, carbohydrate supplementation improved performance in 3 studies compared to a placebo, and particularly during bi-daily workouts, a 2-a-day training, but not in research with isocaloric control. So when calories were the same, high carb, low carb, didn't matter, calories were the same, none of the changes in performance were not influenced by carbohydrate intake in 15 studies. One study favored the higher and one the lower carbohydrate condition. Carbohydrate intake per se is unlikely to strength training performance in a fed state in workouts consistent up to 10 sets. So they mention up to 10 sets frequently. I think that's, again, I tend to lean a little bit more on the lower carb as I age, but I think if we're looking at the data, this systemic review is kind of saying, dude, if you're doing a high volume, two-a-day workouts or 10 or more sets, you're probably going to benefit. There's going to be a performance enhancing and benefit to a little bit higher carb. Is that how you see that?
Yeah. So I was kind of looking and thinking of it like, again, how if you're eating enough carbs or sufficient carbs through a 24-hour period, you're going to have your glycogen restored, right? So there's no sense in powering down tons and tons of carbs all at one time to be like, I got a carb load, right? Unless it's in the situation like you're talking about where it's this high endurance, high stamina, very catabolic sort of scenario where you're just training and introducing a ton of stress in the body. Like marathon running, Ironmans, swimming, you know, miles on end, biking for miles and miles and miles. That's very, you know, depleting of muscle tissue. It'll break that down. So if you push a lot of that in there, now you're giving your body something to chew on before it starts to actually go into the other stuff and tap into it. So your recovery may be quicker as well. So
sure.
That's how I kind of looked at it. Maybe that's different than the way you read it. I don't know.
I think what we've got to determine too is they say 10, if that's 10 working sets, you know, if that's 10 sets, you know, with 1 to 2 RIR repetitions in reserve, or is that just 10 sets? Because I think even elite bodybuilders or bodybuilders at your level aren't doing like 10 working sets for a muscle group in a workout. You know, we've got our warm-up sets and then we might build up to maybe 2 or 3 working sets, you know? So I think that that's important to realize too, that it's just not 10 sets all in. And I think that's why folks who are on low carb tend to have okay energy or report decent energy throughout their workout because they're just not going to 10, you know, doing 10 working sets. And I wouldn't necessarily advocate that anybody should. That's a lot.
Well, the other aspect of this is that, you know, why do ketogenic diets, why can we still survive if glucose is the main source of our energy in the body, right? Because our body can produce enough on its own based off the food. It has to work a little harder, but it can produce enough. So given enough time and not enough intense enough workout, right, you'll be able to replenish every day and still be able to perform in the gym okay. So I think that's probably what we're playing into there, is the body's tendency to be able to be self-sufficient in creating glucose using the food that you're giving it.
Yeah, that's a super good point, Thomas, too. And this would be another discussion, but if you look at the data on fasted cardio versus non-fasted cardio, you know, it's the same, it equals out to be the same exact fat loss per 24-hour period. And I think that, you know, back to your feeding window, I think people tend to think very, very short term. And that's why I think it's important to look at high carb, low carb studies for the big picture. I think that if you're a volume-based athlete, the data I'm looking at, or an endurance athlete, I'm looking at, hey, you might get a small benefit in performance, but over time that could equal to be a big benefit. For a bodybuilder or physique athlete, I'm not seeing a huge draw to make a concerted effort to go necessarily higher carbs if that just goes against your personal beliefs. Or, you know, I know for me, like when I do carb refeeds, I have massive water fluctuations. Now, I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Like psychologically, I'm okay with looking like a fat seal for 3 or 4 days. You know, I think most people are not. So I think most people, it might be just better for them psychologically to just keep the carbs at bay.
Well, and the other aspect of this is that you get more, technically get more food volume with your carbs than if you did it high fat. So you've got a little more of a satiety effect that comes into play, where it's compliance, right? Are you staying within your caloric budget versus are you hungry? Even though fat is very satiating because it's a slow digesting thing, having more food volume can make a big difference, and having that fiber gives you that feeling of full, right? That's something we're kind of domesticated into, or we tend to build a habit of, I like to feel full, even though, and sometimes that means people like to feel engorged and over full rather than just content.
Right. That is a super good point. So two facts to draw on there is, yes, higher fat is very saturating. But if you're eating more for like fullness, you're going to have a better satiety effect, and the dietary fiber. We get into all the benefits of dietary fiber. It is tougher to hit your dietary fiber on very low carb. Now, I think that quality does play a role in fiber. So if you're getting your fiber, say 20 grams from a Quest bar, I feel there to be a difference between getting 20 grams from a Quest bar and 8 grams from spinach, tomatoes, broccoli, you know, asparagus, and so forth. So I think that there's definitely a difference in micronutrients, but I don't have data to present on that. That's just a personal observation there.
And we also tend to, and at least in Western society, we tend to have a oral fixation, right? You look at how many smokers and drinkers and all that. What are we doing? We're putting stuff in our mouth.
True.
How do we satisfy emotional whatever? It's usually going out to eat or whatever, right?
Sure.
So having the extra food or volume from the carbs can help satisfy some of that oral fixation of chewing, right? Gives that, releases that sort of dopamine you need, versus, you know, if you can tolerate eating less because fat's 9 calories per gram versus 4 calories per gram of carbs, that's fine. You know, everybody's a little different. Some people, absolutely. I've seen some people I know that have been on ketogenic diets for 10 years and absolutely love it, right? It all comes back to, in my opinion, when it comes to the general population anyway, whatever you can stick to works, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And when it comes to bodybuilding, I think because of the manipulation of water and trying to move it from the skin to the muscle to whatever, you know, for getting ready for stage, carbs play a bigger role in that sort of aspect. Not as much, and that's more of an aesthetic thing, right? Not as much performance, but I do, like you said, I think it plays a role, especially if you're doing competitions at that level. You're pushing hard. Your intensity
Sure.
level matters, and the hormone response is response to the intensity level you're putting in is going to dictate how it's utilizing the glycogen, right? So
sure.
It does, in my opinion, play a bit of a role. performance-wise, even if the studies don't show it. But like I said, it doesn't say were those guys going to failure for 10 sets of 10, or were they going close to failure, or were they lifting 10-pound dumbbells, right? I mean, intensity factor matters big time when it comes to how your body responds and utilizes energy.
I would really like to dive into the research on the micro loading. I know anecdotally for me, when I love fruits and vegetables. I guess I'm just lucky in that respect. But when I am eating very, very high dose fruits and vegetables, dude, I'm unstoppable. My energy is good. I'm vascular. I'm just unstoppable, particularly when I'm not taking in a lot of inflammatory foods. So I think there's something there on the quality of the or the micronutrient content of the carbs that pieces this things together. And I think we kind of touched on it, is the potassium, the other electrolytes that you're getting from those high micronutrient dense carbs.
The other thing I like to think too is with the fiber that comes with them, they tend to sit in your gut longer. So you technically have more chance to absorb the food or the nutrients out of the food you're eating. So the carbs you're getting, you're actually absorbing more of it instead of just passing it through quicker. So you're utilizing it, and that's helping you to get more energy and benefit from it.
Super good point. So kind of opening it up to the panel, is there anyone that has a specific question on any of our discussion today before we kind of get into final thoughts and wrapping it up?
I know for me, Jesse, I battle with, I long for protein. I tend to go high protein. I like more protein than I do veggies. I'm not a big veggie person, but my body, I've noticed, does react better to the fruits and carbs than it does the higher protein. But I enjoy the higher protein. Like, you can have my carbs low and I do better, but my body, the older I'm getting, I'm noticing that the body is not responding as well.
So I definitely think, and I agree with you on the higher protein. I think that the body needs the higher protein. It's just, trying to find a way to make those micronutrient dense carbs palatable. I know me and a buddy recently, we just kind of found this. Like, I never had an issue with broccoli. I just didn't eat a lot of broccoli. But Julie, I've been air frying broccoli, not to like till it's like burnt or whatever, just it's a little crispy. Bring it out. It's still green, but a little crispy. And then putting spray butter on it, and then garlic salt. And I'm telling you, I'm telling you, I could eat that like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It is very, very palatable. So maybe just try to find some tricks of the trade that way.
I think that's the thing. Like, I'm asparagus, broccoli, and potatoes. That's about it on the vegetables. And so all those beautiful colors that everybody, and it's like, and you tell your clients this is what you're supposed to be eating, and then you know yourself that you're just not. It's like, oh, I'm like,
And
I am not Mikey.
and I get you. Yes, optimally eating the colors and everything, and the red peppers and the green peppers. And I just think that I think you've won 90% of the game just getting in your green micronutrient dense carbs. If you're eating asparagus, potato, which is a very satiating food, very high in potassium, by the way, and your broccoli. And you're just not getting all the colors in the rainbow, but it's kind of in the back of your head. So you're trying to be deliberate at it. I think you're winning, I would actually say 95% of the game. I wouldn't stress about that 5%. I'd be aware of it, like you are, but I wouldn't stress about it.
Cool.
Yeah, I've always found and suggested a lot of times people say they don't like veggies just because they haven't found a way to make them yet that they like.
Agreed.
I mean, there's so many different types too. I mean, you look at lists of them, and there's just like what I've challenged some of my clients to do, and I've done it myself, especially if I'm like, well, what else do I eat? I don't know what to, I can't think of anything, right? It doesn't look appetizing. Is to go find a at the grocery store, go pick one of the veggies or the fruits that you've never eaten before, try it on its own, get a couple of them, right? Try it on its own, see if you like it, then go look up a recipe for it and see what you can do to make with it, and see if you like that, right? And if you don't like it, that's one checked off the list, right? But it forces you to kind of go outside the comfort zone a little bit and find a few of those things that you might find that you're like, well, I really loved it that way, but I didn't care for it this way, you know?
Right.
And
Yeah.
it's a good exercise because you're not trying to take on all the colors. You pick one and you go
Right.
with that.
Two kind of hacks that we've used at the Dale household is we have our salad recipe pack. Dive into that. Really dive into that. There's some really good dishes there. We also have our soup recipe pack. And what Erica will do is she'll make like a pumpkin soup. Like we talk about the different colors. Dude, I'm not eating pumpkin by itself, but in a soup, like, dude, this is good. She'll make like pumpkin brownies of, oatmeal. So basically grinding some of your veggies up. I know like I'll put kale in my shakes routinely, and I'm not going to eat like a stalk of kale and that's, just chilling like a Quest bar, but putting it in my PE Science cookies and cream, I don't really taste the kale, or I don't taste the kale at all. So that's kind of a good way as well. It's kind of like mincing it up and then spreading it out into soups or into shakes.
Plus, by doing that, it essentially makes it easier for your body to digest. It's like a digestive state.
Yeah. Love it. Well, amazing discussion, Thomas. I think we should have more discussions like this, man. I think that this was engaging and maybe validated some folks, maybe got some folks to think a different way. I did post all those studies here in the comments. If you're watching Facebook Live, I'll get them in the Facebook Live as well. And yeah, we'll see everybody on our next Thursday. Just keep an eye on our social media. If you want to get a hold of Thomas, if you want to kind of take the discussion a little bit further with him, Thomas, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Facebook, you can look up my name, Thomas Hilton, message me, or on Instagram, it's thomas.hilton.33.
Awesome. Perfect. Cool. Well, Thomas, thank you for your wisdom and helping us kind of sift through these studies and interpret everything. We'll see everyone. Have a great rest of your week and an awesome weekend, everyone.
Thanks for joining us on today's Macro Millionaire Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe and leave a millionaire review. Until next time, keep working toward the abundant life you deserve.